Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, October 27, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports I Own College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. And today we are continuing our run through previews of what are typically the seven best conferences in college basketball. We've already done the American, the ACC, the Big East, and the Big Ten. Next up is the Big 12, where Kansas is the official pick to win the league, according to the league's head coaches. The Jayhawks got 8 of the 10 first place votes. Texas got the other 2. Worth noting, coaches are not allowed to vote for their own team. So that means Bill Self voted for Texas, which means only one coach besides Bill Self submitted a first place vote for somebody other than KU. Basically, everybody has those two first and second in some order, Kansas and Texas. And I actually have Texas first and Kansas second, but it's really close for me. You know, evidence being that I've got Texas third in the top 25 and one, Kansas fourth in the top 25 and one. And like we noted on yesterday's pod, that the Big Ten race should be super tight at the top. Same goes for the Big 12, I think. You agree or disagree?
Pretty close, but I think the Big Ten's got a little bit of a better chance at having a more compelling race, just because I think the third team, as I teased at the end of the Big Ten episode, I just like the Big Ten's chances at having a three-horse race a little bit better than the Big 12 here. I have Kansas ahead of Texas. I'm a little bit of a fader, a little bit, all relative on the Longhorns. I have them 10th in my overall rankings. You will look in GP's poll, preseason AP top 25. You will look at the metrics, some of them anyway, and you will see that the Longhorns are ranked fairly high, although they are 14 at KenPom, which is even lower than I am on the Longhorns. And I would agree with that. I think that's fair. But at the top, this is going to be a very good league. And I think that's why this conference is going to maintain its status as a top two league in the country. Now, a lot of this is also because of the actual size of the conference, only 10 teams. You don't have as many non-conference opportunities to bring your league down. It's kind of a rising tide lifts all boats kind of situation. But I would expect Big Ten 1, Big 12 number 2 in terms of hierarchy in the sport this season.
So Kansas at the top, according to the Big 12 coaches. Jayhawks are returning 4 of the top 5 scorers from last season's team that got a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament and then got blown out by USC in the round of 32, lost by 34 points. Basically, 4 double-digit scorers back. Oche Agbaji, David McCormack, Jalen Wilson, and Christian Brown. And then they add, of course, Remy Martin, who averaged 19.1 points last season at Arizona State, and Joseph Yosefu, who averaged 12.8 points last season at Drake and was really good late. So, you know, when you look at Kansas and what it's bringing back and what it's adding, there's no denying that this is one of, on paper, best teams in the country. And when you combine that with the fact that Bill Self never has anything other than a really good team, it's easy to see why the coaches voted the way they did. In 18 seasons at Kansas, keeping track, Bill Self has finished first or second in the Big 12 17 times. He's won the Big 12 15 times, including 14 straight from 2005 to 2018. I do not think that will ever be replicated at the power conference level, period.
Yes, agreed.
I don't think that ever gets snapped at the power conference level. And he's only, so 15 times he's won the Big 12 in his 18 seasons, including 14 straight, only finished third once, never finished lower than third. And the other thing that makes Kansas a sensible pick, if you lean in that way, is Allen Fieldhouse will be rocking again. You know, it'll be a true home court advantage the way it is in normal non-pandemic years. Last season, I didn't think it was a coincidence that they suffered a 25-point loss at home to Texas, the worst loss for Bill ever inside Allen Fieldhouse. Why? What was different? Was the team that much worse? No, of course not. But you're just not going to go in there, 16,000 KU fans, and beat Kansas brains in like Texas did last season. I remember that game. We kept thinking, okay, they'll make a run. They'll make a run. And they just never made a run. And it ended up being really, really lopsided. You can do that in Allen Fieldhouse, I guess, with a limited capacity crowd. But when that thing is filled the way it's normally filled, and it should be this season, you're not going in there and beating them like that. And this season, you might not go in there and beat them at all, anybody, period.
Agree or disagree, Kansas is a quieter favorite than normal heading into this season in the league.
I agree with that. And I think the main explanation for it is that they've got really good players. Like I said, four double-digit scores back. We can draw a line with Christian Brown if you want, but he averaged 9.7 points. So let's round it up to double digits.
Yes.
I think that the thing that makes you go, I mean, this is a program that has had Andrew Wiggins, Joel Embiid, you know, is a real high level NBA talent.
Jeff Withey. I hear you. Loud
and, and when you look at this roster, it's got a bunch of very good college players. Does it have a future NBA draft lottery pick? I don't think so. No. Does it have a future first round pick?
I think it will.
I think
Ochai Agbaji will be that player. Was a 35% career 35% shooter from three, 52% from two, high level defender. I think that if Kansas is going to be what we think it can be, top five team in the country in that discussion, then inevitably, usually you will have a player that will work his way into that first round discussion. And I think Ochai will be that player, but you've hit on every player of note. The Remy Martin stuff is going to be what I would keep an eye on. You mentioned he averaged 19 points per game last season. 49% from two, good. 34% from three, okay. 76 from the line. A high usage player and preseason Big 12 player of the year? I don't think he's going to. I think Agbaji is going to be the best player on the roster, so I don't know. We'll see on that. He is clearly the addition that makes Kansas the pick for people that, like me, that are picking Kansas to finish first in the league and get all that. But we'll see. Like, I'm intrigued by that, but I'm more intrigued about Brown making a jump, Yosefu, how he does translating as an up transfer, right? And then Jalen Wilson, who had moments last season, but was an inconsistent player, you know, made one out of every three attempts from three. That's just okay. Was less than 50% from 2-point range. That's just okay. I think we would both agree that Jalen Wilson cannot have a repeat of last season if Kansas wants to win the Big 12. Got to be better.
And it's not just Christian Brown making a jump. He's just got to get back to making shots the way he's clearly capable of making shots. Like, he shot 44% from three in his freshman season. And then that dropped down to 34% in his sophomore season. He's not a 34% shooter. And so I'm just going to assume, let's split the difference on that, take it up to 39%. Well, that's a different basketball player. And when you add, so now let's say he's shooting to his capabilities and you add Remy Martin, who is, I don't know, he's a non-shooter, but he's certainly not a great shooter. But what he is a great creator, playmaker, like in from the backcourt. And Kansas didn't have a lot of that last season. And so, you know, now you've got a real playmaker and Brown is shooting the way he's capable of shooting. You got a team that I think, by definition, where they're ranked in the preseason suggests that they're capable, but this is a team that can win a national title.
Question for you. This is a quote. Here's a quote. We can become omni-national and reposition because actually we are not tied culturally or physically. So we are in a great position to leapfrog Tech, end quote. Who said it? Succession's Kendall Roy or Texas's Chris Beard? Leapfrog Tech. Did you watch Sunday's episode yet of Succession?
I have not seen it yet. I've watched episode one. Episode two on Sunday night, I was tied up with Grizzlies. I wanted to make sure I watched first episode of Curb.
Yes.
I just had a lot going on. So I have not seen episode two yet, but I'll catch it certainly at some point this week. I'm going to assume Kendall Roy said it because I don't think Chris Beard would ever say that.
We can become omni-national and reposition. It's part of just an absurd monologue that that he says at one part of that scene. First episode of Curbed. No spoilers here. There are two physical humor elements that Larry David does in that episode, and on the second one, I actually woke my wife up because I was laughing so hard. The second one that has to do with a sliding glass door, I actually, it's stupid, but I just didn't see it coming, so I actually woke my wife up because it was that good. Decent start to Curb. We'll see how it goes. Texas is the number two team for me, number one for you. Parrish, it is an overload on this roster here. And the thing I'm curious about is, and I won't get too crazy deep on this because we will have a Longhorns dedicated episode, but I'll just say this. I got to see it all work. I don't know. This is the roster in all of college basketball where you're like, are they actually only going to play eight dudes? Because it feels like they can play at least 10. And if they wanted to go 11, it would be validated.
This is the type of roster where by December, somebody who stayed is going to say, I wish I would have transferred. And somebody who transferred there is going to say, I wish I had gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because there's just not enough minutes for all these guys. They're just not. Like your Andrew Jones, Courtney Ramey, two returning accomplished guards, and they bring in Marcus Carr. You know, like Marcus Carr's playing.
Yeah, he's probably the best player on the roster. But how about this real quick, this stat. Dude, Marcus Carr, 43% from two, 34% from three. I don't know. He's not, and he is a high volume, high usage player. I don't know. I think he's going to be a potentially an All-American because I think he's probably going to be the most impactful player on this team. But I don't think this is going to work if Carr needs to get up more than 15 shots a game, you know? I don't know, man. To me, this is Andrew Jones and Courtney Ramey's team. This is their team. They stayed. The other guys are joining them, and how they blend all together, I think, will dictate really how great this team can be.
Well, here's the thing. I think in theory, under normal circumstances, that might be right. Like the transfers are going to have to learn how to, you know, mesh with the returning players who have established a culture of winning. This team, I know how it ended last season, but it was a good team last season, and you know they won the Big 12 tournament. But here's the deal. There's more transfers than there are returners. There's a new coach. And so I don't know that the new guys need to figure out how to blend in with the returners as much as this is, hey, let's get everybody in the gym. And now let's figure out who's going to play and who's not going to play. And nobody's guaranteed anything. And that's why I do think, like, I'd put a significant amount of money on Texas having at least one midseason transfer. Because how about this? Bring back Andrew Jones, Courtney Rain. You add five transfers who averaged double figures at their schools last season. And that doesn't even include Devin Askew, who's a former heralded recruit. So the five transfers plus Jones and Ramey make seven. Devin Askew makes eight. Those are eight guys. I mean, Devin Askew just left Kentucky because he wasn't playing. Now he goes to Texas and he's caught in a spot here. So listen, it's a good problem to have. And the reason I think, you know, Texas is a legitimate national title contender, the reason I did pick Texas to finish first in the Big 12 is because I believe in Chris Beard and that staff. They'll figure this out. You know, again, they will have some hurt feelings issues at some point, but I don't think they're gonna have many basketball issues. They've got a really, really talented roster, and Chris is the type of coach who I think is going to be able to bring it together just fine.
So you would say there's a top three vying for first place in this league and, you know, Final Four national championship status, Baylor being the third. I have Baylor as a preseason top 15 team. I just think that there will be a little line of demarcation there. But I will say this. You mentioned Texas with all the transfers. We mentioned Remy Martin transfer, preseason Big 12 player of the year per the league vote. I think the most impactful transfer in terms of a singular person who is going to be the difference maker between what the team would be and wouldn't be if he wasn't there will be James Akinjo at Baylor. Adam Flagler and Akinjo are probably Baylor's two best. Flagler was a 9-point-a-game guy a season ago, shot 43% from three, and in talking to the Baylor staff, I don't know, maybe like almost a month ago, at that point, feeling was like Flagler could certainly be on that ascension where he's the most important player on the roster. Akinjo, though, was a 15-5 guy, five being the assists, on 41% from three-point range, and weirdly enough, he was worse from inside the three-point arc last year. He shot 36% from two-point range, 41% from three. If he can get better there, then I think Akinjo will be a huge difference maker. Matthew Meyer, obviously, also being important because he's the best pro prospect left on the roster at this point, although freshman Kendall Brown is also really, really good and I think will be a lot of fun to watch there. Haven't even gotten to everyone, but I say Baylor's number three, and I say that even with the knowledge that on Monday, Langston Love, former four-star prospect in class of 2021, tore his ACL. He'll miss the season, GP. I don't think that knocks Baylor down a peg, but it is a talented freshman that they will not have available to him, and so we need to take that into account, too, when assessing this team.
You're drawing a big line between
no.
Texas, Kansas.
It's like a number two pencil. Baylor. Number two pencil. No Sharpie, no pens, no nothing.
This feels like a thick marker you've drawn.
No thick. Nope.
I have Baylor in my preseason top 10, ninth, just a few spots behind Kansas and Texas. Norlander had him 14th in his 1-358 and thinks they're a level below the Longhorns and Jayhawks. And that is,
here we go.
That's the most disrespectful thing I've ever heard. It's disrespectful, obviously, to Scott Drew,
who just
won a national championship at a place where national championships seemed impossible on the day that he took the job. Disrespectful to Kelly Drew, first lady of Baylor basketball. It's disrespectful to McKenzie and Peyton and Brody. Not to mention Homer and Janet, Bryce and Tara.
Dana, this is Bryce, and I don't care.
Bryce does care. He's just putting on a show. Disrespectful to Dana and her husband, Casey, little Bryce and Anna, Isaiah, Caleb, and Luke. Plus Drew Merrymore, Drew Carey, Drew Brees, Drew Bledsoe, Dr. Drew Gooden, and Drew McIntyre. It's disrespectful basically to every Drew except Drew Timmy.
Except Drew Timmy. I missed the dog in there. Do we have the dog name?
Dude, I had to go back through my reverted files to find this. I was back in February 2021, reverted podcast files. Like I spent 20 minutes today looking for that.
I love it.
And I didn't see the dog anywhere.
Oh, okay, I didn't know if I caught it. Here's the thing. Here's why our listeners are tremendous. Someone's going to find the name of that damn dog, and they're going to let us know. Loud and clear. We're not that off. I missed that, though, by the way. So thank you. I don't think we're that far apart on Baylor. But at a certain point, like, when do you go from preseason national title contender in the overall rankings to not? And I would put Texas there and right about that line around, 10, 11, 12. I think it's when it starts to flip a little. And I don't anticipate that Baylor will be repeating as national champion. And I don't think that when we get to the start of the 2022 NCAA tournament, no offense to the Drews, every Drew that's ever lived, the Drew family, the Drew family dog, all of that. No offense. I just don't think we're going to be talking about Baylor as one of the 10 or 11 most likely national champions in 2022.
I like this roster. When I started looking at it earlier today in more detail, I'm with you on Akinjo. He's a difference maker. He's come a long way since Jim Boeheim trashed him.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Forgot about that? Oh, my gosh. Totally. Jim Boeheim's trashing everyone. I mean, he just did it again.
Jalen Johnson, right?
Well, and Kadarius Richmond, who went to Seton Hall. He just can't stop. Like, he just cannot stop. But he's a little streaky. But I do like his upside. And, man, if he can gel with Flagler, then, yeah, that's going to be huge.
Okay, yeah. So Akinjo, Flagler, Matthew Meyer he's an NBA player, I think. Jonathan Chama-Chachua.
Yeah.
I just love saying that name. LJ Cryer's still there. Fothamba's still there. Kendall Brown's a five-star freshman, 6'8 wing. So you've got a really nice starting lineup, and I agree with you about Langston Love. Hated to see that. You never want to see a young person, particularly a young person who's joining a program like Baylor, but any young person, suffer a season-ending injury before the season even starts, before his college career can even start. Just awful. But I don't think, will they miss him? Sure. Does he make me reconsider what I think of Baylor, his absence? No. So this is a Baylor team that, yeah, just like you, I've got them third in the Big 12, but they're fourth preseason at KenPom, fourth in the country preseason at KenPom.
Wow.
Take it for what it's worth,
yeah.
But that is where they are. And so, yeah, I could see them competing with Kansas and Texas for a Big 12 title. And do you realize they won the league last season?
Four games?
Five games, actually. Like, they ran away from that thing in a way that you're just not supposed to be able to do in a league that is this good year after year after year. It's a reminder of how awesome Davion Mitchell, who by the way, is balling out in the NBA and creating off nights in that league, just like he did for Big 12 players last season. It's a reminder of how awesome Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, Mark Vidal, Maceo Teague were. Baylor, undeniably, has lost a lot, four starters, but it's a testament to what Scott and his staff have done to be able to, that program's still in really, really good shape. And I suspect that they'll be on the national radar this season as well. So after Kansas, Texas, Baylor, the league gets interesting with some combination of Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, probably West Virginia. We'll talk about the rest of the Big 12 next. First, though, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So, Deadleg, we agree Kansas, Texas, and Baylor should be 1, 2, 3 in some order at the top of the Big 12. Where do you go after that?
Here's my order. We can bounce around and talk about these teams. I go Oklahoma State at 4, Texas Tech at 5, West Virginia at 6. As a reminder, last season, West Virginia tied with Kansas and Texas in the loss column, 5 games behind BU. They all had 6 losses in league play. And then after that, I go, West Virginia, Oklahoma, K-State, TCU, Iowa State, and I'll scoot back up the ladder the reverse way. Iowa State, TJ Otzelberger takes over. They are, if not universally considered to be the lowest team in the league, it's just about close to that. This is just a rebuild there. I know ISU fans are just incredibly eager to get back to a point where you're relevant and expecting NCAA tournament bids on an annual basis. I think it's going to take at least 2 full seasons to get back to that spot. TCU and K-State, I wouldn't expect to be in the NCAA tournament conversation. I think this is, again, going to be a year with the Big 12 where you've got kind of seven relevant teams, three at the bottom. TCU, the bright spot is Mike Miles, who will probably be a top 20 sophomore in the sport. Shout out to Kyle Boone, who made sure, this is a little tease. Yeah, he made sure that Mr. Miles wound up on the very back end of our top 101 players list. Emmanuel Miller's there, and then they get Texas Tech transfer Micah Peavy at TCU. I'm just not seeing a ton there. K-State returns almost 73% of its roster from a 9-20 team that finished 147 at KenPom. I'd say this is a hot seat season for Bruce Weber, and if this goes the way that I'm projecting it will be going, then we will have a new coach in the Little Apple by the middle of April. I've got other thoughts on other teams, but I don't want to hog the mic here. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma. That's my order. What are your thoughts on those four?
First off, I'm in no position to complain about somebody hogging the mic. I do it often.
I was being meta with that, but yes.
I think you're right about Bruce. And it's not like three seasons ago, 2018-19, they are one of the teams that snaps KU's string of Big 12 titles. You know, they finished 14-4 in the league, tied for first, and made the NCAA tournament, got bounced in that first round. Trivia time.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you remember who bounced Kansas State in the first round?
Ah, man. No, I don't. Is it something like tied to the pod where I should know it off the top of my head?
Not really. The only reason I know it is because one of my coworkers at CBS Sports Network, the great Brent Stover, who doubles as a country music star, he is a Kansas State alum. He used to be a competitive jogger at Kansas State. They call it cross country. Technically, he was a competitive jogger at Kansas State. And I remember all week leading up to that game talking about how Kansas State should be on upset alert. And then, by golly, it happened on Friday, March 22nd, 2019. After winning the Big 12, the Wildcats lost two.
I don't even think I can venture a guess that would be remotely close.
What if I told you the name of the coach?
Then I'm going to get Turner. Then it's UC Irvine.
The Anteaters.
Anteaters. There we go. Man, I don't even listen. I pride myself on my memory and my NCAA tournament related memory. I'm pulling a GP here. Zero recognition and recall to UC Irvine and Kansas State playing in that NCAA tournament. Zero.
The only reason I remember it is because I would not stop talking about it with the stove. Every time we'd preview that game, I'd be like, this is just a bad matchup for Kansas State. I know they're the reigning Big 12 co-champions, but you don't want to get involved with the Anteaters on this stage. I said more, like I had some numbers and stuff connected to it, but I just kept saying it over to, and then it happened. So like that's the type of loss that makes your fans forget about everything that happened before. Oh, you know who just went through it last season? Shaka Smart at Texas. Mm-hmm. You take a loss like that in the NCAA tournament, your fans forget about everything that just happened. Instead of feeling great about the season, they feel awful about the season. And then everything that's happened in Kansas State since then has been awful. 3-15 in the Big 12 in 2019-20, finished last place. Last season, 4-14 in the league, finished ninth place. And there's no great reason to think this season's going to be much better, if better at all. And I say this as respectfully as I can say it, because I got a lot of respect for Bruce Weber. I like him a lot, but I'm not sure Kansas State's fan base is going to tolerate a third straight super bad season.
I don't see it. And as we enter the season, that's the only coach in the hot seat, in my opinion, in this league. I know TCU fans want to be better under Jamie Dixon, and that's kind of stalling in the mud at the moment. But otherwise, you've got three coaches in new spots. Iowa State with Otzelberger, Porter Moser at Oklahoma, and Mark Adams at Texas Tech.
So I went Texas, Kansas, Baylor, and then Texas Tech 4, Oklahoma State 5. When you see our Big 12 preview on CBSSports.com, that is what you'll see. My ballot represent. I'm really torn between Oklahoma State and Texas Tech because Oklahoma State, like, they bring back everybody except Cade, and they enrolled two former five-star players in Bryce Thompson from Kansas and Musa Cisse from Memphis. And, you know, they beat some people last season without Cade playing.
Yeah.
Mike Boynton's going to have, I never say sure bet NCAA tournament team because, like, top 10 teams sometimes don't make the NCAA tournament. Injuries, whatever. But on paper, that looks like a team that should not have to worry about bubble stuff come Selection Sunday. I think it's fair to say Moose and Bryce both little underwhelming as five-star freshmen. I mean, Bryce was injured and barely played. Moose was the freshman of the year in the American Athletic Conference, and he was a starter and a meaningful player, but he's just so limited in what he can do.
That's right.
Penny couldn't play him much because, he can't guard in space, can't catch the ball. I'm not even trying to be funny. Like, he struggles catching the ball. And when he does catch it and he gets fouled, he can't make a free throw. And so it just got into a spot where in late game situations, they could not have him on the court. That doesn't mean he's not useful. He is a rim protector. And, if you throw it up there, he'll go get it and dunk it. But he's a physically gifted human who is limited from a basketball perspective. But that does not mean I don't think he'll be a useful player at Oklahoma State. He was a useful player at Memphis, just a very limited player at Memphis.
He'll have a defined role, and he'll be used to that role. Oklahoma State brings back more than 80% of its roster. Clearly it loses Cade Cunningham, who everyone knows was there. And everybody knows Cade Cunningham before he was at Oklahoma State. He was at Montverde. We all know that. And so... But here's the deal. Avery Anderson, probably the best player on this roster, 12-4 guy last season. I think he will be the guy in this conference who was there last season when we look up and start talking about who are the difference makers in the league. Like, first team all Big 12, good shot. He should make the pop. But I'll tell you what, the reason why I like this team so much, and I actually think there's a little bit of a gap. The gap between Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, to me, is bigger than the gap between, say, Texas and Baylor, because Caleb Boone, a 9-5 guy whose numbers will get better. Isaac Likely does a little bit of everything, 9-6-4 a year ago. Matthew Alexander Moncrief is going to have a good year. Bryce Thompson, if he can stay healthy, they're going to need him to be what he can be capable of from a shooting and playmaking perspective. And then sophomore Rondell Walker, he might even be the biggest breakout candidate. He's going to have a lot more opportunity. Keep an eye on him. I think that's a player that'll... grow as the season goes along. Oh, and one more thing with OSU. This program still does not have its decision with its appeal to its postseason ban. And that's
incredible.
It's insane and stupid. It's a sign of high incompetence. That's coming this season. That could come, I think, in the next... I'm not saying it will. I'm not reporting this. If you tell me it's coming in the next month, I'd believe it. And then we get into the whole conundrum of, like, is OSU going to get banned for 2022 after the season has started? Just keep that in mind. It's another plot line behind that team in general.
But it was like last January, February, we were going, man, at this point, I don't think it'd be fair or right or smart for the NCAA to deny their appeal. Like, deny it someday if you want, whatever. But, like, don't deny it before the 2021 NCAA tournament. Like, let's have Kate Cunningham in this thing. It's almost November. I mean, how hard is it to rule on an appeal? Can't you just say, granted? Or rejected.
It's a joke,
I feel like death row appeals don't take this long.
You're not wrong, man. It's insane.
I feel like you find out whether you get to live or die on death row more quickly than you can find out.
I think the lesson is, if you're on death row, you'd actually prefer to have the NCAA ruling over your case here, because they might just take forever. I'll just take that deal instead.
You just die of old age at 89.
You take that trade-off instantly there. So we're waiting on that. Although, by the way, of course, Kansas waiting. But Kansas, I don't expect with the IARP, I don't expect Kansas to have a ruling before the end of the season. Oklahoma State, I very, very much do. So I put OSU there and then Texas Tech right below. We'll see how Mark Adams is going to do, GP. He was the face of the defense. I made this comparison in my 1-358, although Chris Beard and Mark Adams got along much better than Mike Ditka, Buddy Ryan did on the 85 Bears. You're damn right I'm invoking a Bears reference here. But whereas Buddy Ryan was in charge of solely the defense on that Bears team, and that's what made the Chicago Bears of the mid-80s so great, Adams was similar with the way that he approached Texas Tech's defensive unit, and he had a lot to do with how great Texas Tech was. It wasn't all Chris Beard. They get Terrence Shannon Jr. back. That's big. Kevin McCullough back. That's another double-digit score. Marco Santos Silva, he was really a top 20 rebounder in America when you look at the rebound rates from last season. So they're back. They lost some key pieces, but they bring in Kevin O'Banner from Oral Roberts, who was an 18-9 guy. And because Max Asemus led the nation in scoring and was a big-time points producer. Oh, by the way, O'Banner shot 46% from three as a stretch forward, and he was an 87.5% foul shooter. So you got him, Bryson Williams from UTEP, 15-7 guy. Malik Wilson from Louisiana, averaged 13 points, 5.5 boards, 3 assists, and 2 steals. So there's actually dudes on this roster. You're going to probably wind up being closer than I am on this because I got Texas Tech right around that 40 range. They're probably going to outperform where I've got them, but I just want to see what they do with the new coach there. So I got those two schools ahead of the likes of West Virginia and Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, you know, they lose some pieces, like you said. Two of the top four, that's Matt McClung and Tyler Edwards. They also lose Chris Beard. They've got a new coach. I believe Mark Adams is going to be able to do this job well. But, you know, like I've said about other assistant coaches who are promoted, you know, you never know for sure. But I'm optimistic. That's why I have them finishing fourth in the Big 12. So they return four of the top six. And when you've got a core of Terrence Shannon, Kevin McCullough, Marcus Santasilva, and Kevin O'Banner, that's a pretty good core for a college basketball team. And O'Banner, it wasn't just like empty stats either. Like, yeah, he was 18.7 points, 9.6 rebounds per game for the season. He put 30 on Ohio State in a win in the NCAA. He put 28 on Florida in the NCAA tournament. And that 46.3, sometimes these three-point percentages for, you know, front court players can be misleading because it's like, ooh, he made 46% of, like, you know, one per game. He took 4.3 per game. Like, he's a real shooter, and that free throw percentage underlines it. So I like this Texas Tech team. I'm torn between Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, 4-5, but to me, it is clearly those two 4-5, and then we can start talking about everybody else.
Yeah, final two we'll nibble on here as we get out is West Virginia, Oklahoma. I think they're basically interchangeable. Huggins enters what's going to be his 40th season with 900 wins to his name. He's got Taz Sherman and Sean McNeil. They'll probably combine for like 28, 29 a game. They're the 1-2 there. Good. Jalen Bridges needs to be a breakout player as a sophomore. We'll see. Oklahoma with Porter Moser, he was the hot name multiple times, and this is where he lands. Keeps Umoja Gibson, Elijah Harkless on the roster, which is what I think will put the Sooners in the tournament conversation right near the bubble cut line. Getting those guys back was huge. Also got the Groves brothers. Remember, Tanner was the lovable big dude who almost helped knock out Kansas in the first round. He was the Big Sky Player of the Year, 17-8 guy. This guy's younger brother, Jacob, there. They also bring in Duke transfer Jordan Goldwire, who I think will just help stiffen up the defense. Like, Moser had a way of really developing a very, very good defensive unit at the mid-major level. I think Oklahoma, if it's going to be a tournament team, it's got to be a top four defense in the Big 12 in year one. I think they'll have a good chance, but because you got a coaching change in there and not quite as much roster continuity, I'll go WVU at 6, Oklahoma at 7.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to trust Bob Huggins. You know, when they had Deuce McBride on the fence for a little while, is he staying? Is he going? I think I always had it projected in the top 25 and 1, or at least at some point before he officially announced, I projected that he was going to go. And, you know, he went, and that's a big blow. I think West Virginia with him back is preseason top 25, and West Virginia without him back is probably, you know, at least on paper, at best, 6th in the Big 12. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be in the NCAA tournament, but losing a player of that caliber who is very much a could reasonably stay, could reasonably go. Like, the reason I phrase it like that is because, you know, like with Kate Cunningham, there is no choice. You know, it's not like he could reasonably stay or go. Like, he's got to go. He's the number one pick in the draft. But with a guy like Deuce McBride, you know, you can reasonably make either decision. And when he decided to go, it lowered the ceiling on what West Virginia can and will be.
I agree. His leaving, had he returned, I think he would have been a top 10 player in America, and West Virginia would have been at worst the 4th best team in the Big 12. But he's not there, and we'll see what they can do with those two. Otherwise, I'll be interested to see. To me, West Virginia is the most mysterious team in the conference this season.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Tristan Clark, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys and gals for listening once again to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. I'd appreciate it. It really does help when you do that. Like it helps in a variety of ways. So please go subscribe if you're not subscribed. And while you're there, rate it, review it, 5 stars, nice comments. You do that. We'll talk to you again real soon. Tomorrow, in fact. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.